You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football, but instead of entering the NFL, they have joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi made for football watching. And we are back here. It is Purple Friday here across all of Baltimore and here on Locked On Ravens. Unfortunately, Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire will not be joining us here today, but that doesn't mean we have tons of great content here. We have a little thing about Le'Veon Bell signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I know I mentioned, would he be a good fit in Baltimore? Would he not be a good fit in Baltimore on yesterday's show? The consensus for me was he would not be a good fit in Baltimore, and here we are. Him going to the Kansas City Chiefs now, loaded over there in Kansas City. Him and Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to be a nice duo over there, but the Ravens have to feed their own running backs. I think there just would not have been any room, and if he was getting carries, Gus Edwards loses carries, J.K. Dobbins loses carries, so there's all that. And we also are going to get into this injury report here really, really quickly for Baltimore. Thursday's injury report. We'll talk about that coming out here in a minute. And also, we'll be talking in the first segment, answering the remaining questions of our mailbag, or at least as many as I can fit in here in this first segment. There were a lot, and thank you for all the responses. It's great to have a turnout like that for Cole, and I would love to have leftover questions every single week to answer if we can't get to them all with Cole. So it's been great answering all these questions. I love hearing from everyone. But of course, as is Pro Bowl Friday tradition, not the Matthew Stevens tradition, but our game preview tradition. We'll be talking about the Ravens offense, first the Eagles defense in the second segment, followed by flipping the field and talking about that Ravens defense that held Joe Burrow to 3 points last Sunday against that Eagles offense led by Carson Wentz. So we'll jump into all of this right now. But before we do that, be sure to follow us Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. We're there waiting Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Recommend to a friend, recommend to a family member, anyone who just wants daily Ravens content. I've got it for them. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at ChaosShirker34 for the latest Ravens analysis, the latest Ravens news, and a bunch of other content. So, all that being said, let's jump right in quickly here with the Ravens injury report, then moving on to our mailbag. So, quickly for Thursday's injury report for Baltimore, there were a few people who did not practice. Mark Ingram and Brandon Williams both did not participate due to non-injury related reasons, veteran days for the most part. Anthony Levine did not practice with that abdomen injury. Now, he's been playing but not practicing a lot, so I'd expect him to suit up. Derek Wolfe here is that new addition to the injury report. He did not participate with a neck/concussion. So, this is interesting. Did he suffer this in practice? I'm not really sure. I would not expect Derek Wolfe to be active in this game unless he gets in a limited participation or better today. So be watching that. If not, we could see more Broderick Washington in there for Baltimore. Chris Moore, Marcus Peters, Tyre Phillips, and Jimmy Smith all limited in practice. And finally, Ronnie Stanley with that shoulder injury, a full participant. So guys off the injury report, Justin Madubuike no longer on there, Lamar Jackson no longer on there. They're starting to get healthy, this Baltimore team is, and heading into the bye week next week, they should get even healthier, which is going to be huge, huge, huge for this Ravens team. But let's move into this mailbag, finishing off what we started on Wednesday with Cole. And our first question here comes from Kevin, not me, although I like the name. With how our passing game has looked, do you think the Ravens are in trouble the next time they fall behind a team? We've seen in the past they abandon the ground game the moment they trail, so is it likely this Ravens team is destined for an early exit this season? And Kevin, this is a great question. And I think if the Ravens, if Greg Roman, if the offense can just stick to the run game a tiny bit longer and not go pass, pass, pass every single play when they get down by 10, when they get down by 13, I think this team can play from behind like some of the best teams in the league can. We just haven't seen Baltimore play from behind because, one, they've been blowing teams out, or two, when they actually do play from behind, all we see is the pass, 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 pass. Baltimore, they seem to panic when they get down. I think it does have to do a little bit with the lack of experience playing from behind. It helps to have experience playing from behind and understanding what it takes. And part of what it takes is balancing out your run and pass attacks so they complement each other. The run game and the pass game, they go hand in hand. Yes, obviously you're going to have to throw the football more when you're down. That's just a given, and I don't deny that. But throwing it almost every single play and not establishing the ground game, not making that a threat, especially when it's your bread and butter on offense, that really hurts. So if that is the game plan for Baltimore, I don't see anything but an early round exit. But I'm confident that Baltimore can get over that hump, that they've learned enough, that Tennessee was a lesson, that Kansas City this year was a lesson, and they will take that into account. And that's why I'm confident they will win the Super Bowl this year. But if they don't do that, that confidence is suddenly shattered, and I don't see a way how they can win. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Baltimore responds to being down in a game. And hopefully, you know, I never want Baltimore to be down in a game. I want them to always, you know, get the easiest wins possible, and that usually means blowing out teams. But if they are down, hopefully we will see Baltimore respond and run and pass the football. Our next question comes from Frank Cordo, and he asks, any chance the Ravens go after J.J. Watt or a true number one receiver before the trade deadline? They need both. And Frank, here's my theory here. For J.J. Watt, there's no guarantee money left on his deal, I think. Don't quote me on that. That's what I think, I'm pretty sure. But honestly, the Ravens are in such a tight spot cap-wise right now. I really can't see them acquiring anyone unless it's somebody who is young and controllable, or somebody who is a veteran who on their contract has a big signing bonus or had a big signing bonus. So that the Ravens, the way trades work is the Ravens only take the base salary in a trade. The signing bonus is paid by the team that signed them. So if Baltimore finds a veteran who has a big signing bonus, but the base salary is down around $6, $7, $8 million, I could see Baltimore going after that type of player. But the pass rush to me is in a lot better shape than the wide receiver core is right now. I need to see Miles Boykin step up. I need to see Willie Sneed step up. Devin Duvernay, James Prochet, what can they do? I'm not saying they're not good players, and I'm not saying they can't do it. But Baltimore needs to surround Lamar Jackson with talent. If that talent's on the roster, then that's great. I prefer it that way. But if Baltimore doesn't have that talent, they need to get help for Lamar Jackson, because if Mark Andrews or Hollywood Brown goes down, this offense would be in an absolute nightmare. Our next question comes from Peaky Blinders, and he says, we need to start pounding the rock. So I guess not much of a question, more of a statement, but I agree, but to an extent, the Ravens are showing teams, or trying to show teams, that they can throw this football. I think the Ravens know that they can beat teams on the ground if it comes down to it when push comes to shove, but they want to get Lamar Jackson and this passing offense comfortable, and what better way to do that than in the early parts of the year when they're still trying to work out the kinks? That's the best time to do it. You don't want to do it late in a playoff run. I'd rather see it all happen now than, you know, see it 5-6 weeks from now when Baltimore's in the thick of a playoff race, and then you start to see kinks. That's not what you want. You want to see the offense get those out now. Figure out what works, figure out what doesn't. I think for Baltimore, every week is a learning experience, and I think they're using that to their advantage right now when they have a pretty easy front half of their schedule before it becomes a tiny, tiny bit more difficult, although Baltimore coming into this year did have the easiest strength of schedule. So yes, I think running the football for Baltimore, it benefit them, but right now, I think they're doing what they can to get the kinks out of this passing offense. Our next question comes from Scott, and he says, it seems JK had some open opportunities for screens or when he released and Lamar forced it to others in tighter coverage. Any reason they are not getting it to JK more? Scott, I think JK deserves plenty of opportunities. My bold prediction for Ravens Wire this week is actually that he will lead the Ravens in carries. And my reasoning is that you can't leave that explosiveness on the bench. We've all seen it. And we've seen that Mark Ingram hasn't been up to his usual Mark Ingram self this year. I think the reason Dobbins isn't getting many carries or hasn't gotten many carries early this season is because of the fact that he is a rookie. Baltimore tends to try to ease rookies into competition. With Patrick Queen, you really couldn't because, you know, Baltimore didn't really have a lot at linebacker. But I think they're trying to ease him in. But one carry, I think, is not the way to go with Dobbins. He deserves more playing time. And I agree, Lamar did force it into tighter coverage on some plays. But I think, again, working out the kinks in the passing game, working out the kinks in the running game, and getting the rookies acclimated, I think that's going to help a lot down the stretch. Our next question comes from Ravens Lady, and they ask, why isn't Lamar throwing to Snead and Boykin more? This is a great question, and the reason is I just think there's no confidence. At least with Boykin, there's no confidence. Lamar Jackson and Willie Snead have somewhat of a rapport together, but you're not really seeing it right now. With Boykin, it was this way last year. There's just nothing there right now. Miscommunications, not running routes completely. There's just a lot going on between those two. I think Boykin would benefit from a change of position in the offseason to tight end. That's just my opinion. We'll see what ends up happening there. But with Snead and Boykin, one of them needs to step up or else this offense is in a heap of trouble. I don't know what the deal is with both of them right now. Lamar Jackson has struggled over the last few weeks to an extent. But, I mean, they have to step it up. Somebody has to step it up. Those two guys are on the roster right now. They're supposed to take the load off of Mark Andrews, off of Marquise Brown. So they need to do that. And, I mean, look, with Miles Boykin, I need to see him do it. With Willie Snead, I know he can. It's just a matter of them getting open, being in situational areas where they can do that. I think Devin Duvernay is another guy that needs to step up and get more opportunities, too. It's not just him who needs to step up. The coaching staff needs to give him more opportunities. Our final question comes from James Lewis, and James asks, are the Ravens ever going to find a role for Trace McSorley? This is an interesting one because we heard all last offseason about how the Ravens were going to use Trace McSorley on defense, on special teams, on offense. It's kind of a gadget guy, and so far Trace McSorley has taken one snap in the NFL. So not really what you were hearing in that 2019 offseason. I don't know if that's the case. I think Baltimore really likes him. I just don't know if he's actually going to be that guy. Robert Griffin III, I don't see staying in Baltimore past this year. I think he wants to be a starter. He said he wants to be a starter. So McSorley might be the backup to Lamar Jackson come next year, but the Ravens have a guy they really like in Tyler Huntley on the practice squad. He could push McSorley. He needs to prove that he deserves to stay on this roster because Huntley, according to all reports, outplayed him in training camps. We'll see how it all goes down for Trace McSorley, but right now I don't see a role for him on this roster in the immediate future. We're going to head into our first break here, but when we get back, we're going to be talking about the Ravens offense going up against the Eagles defense, starting off our game preview for week 6, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market, so be sure to go to visit builtgo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. And we are back with our second segment of this Purple Friday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with you here. And we just finished up our packed mailbag, talked about the Ravens injury report for week 6. But now let's get into the game where the Ravens will be traveling to Lincoln Financial Field to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. And this is a matchup, the Eagles very banged up, the Ravens getting healthier, but there's still something, I think, to be desired with this Ravens offense, which we'll be talking about here. Now, the sheer numbers of it, the Ravens rushing offense, number one in yards per carry, number two in total rushing yards, number three in rushing yards per game, number six in first downs by rushing, and number eight in total rushing attempts. So I think where people want this offense to be better is in the total rushing attempts, because right now we've seen the passing offense and it doesn't look great outside of Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews. But in order to get this offense going, I think against the Eagles, they need to come out and establish that ground game, but that does not mean running the ball on every single play. What establishing the ground game means, at least to me, is you go out there, you run on first down, maybe you go and run on second down, and this is first drive. You run on first down, you run on second down. If you get to third down, then you throw the football. Then let's say you get the first down. You can throw on first down, but make sure you're running it on second down. If you're throwing it on second down and get yourself into a third and seven or a third and eight, that's another pass, and that's three straight passing plays, and you're getting yourself right into the hole that you've dug yourself into against Kansas City, and you dug yourself into against this opponent and that opponent, and it stifles the offense, puts the defense out on the field for longer. So with this passing offense, and against the Eagles in particular, we heard what Louis had to say about this Eagles linebacking core. It is the worst in the entire NFL, especially from a coverage standpoint. The Ravens need to target Nate Gary, the linebacker who actually leads this team in tackles right now. It's funny, he's arguably the worst linebacker in the NFL, and if you look at what Eagles fans have to say about him, he shouldn't be on an NFL roster, but leads this team with 40 tackles, but is just horrible in coverage according to most, and just doesn't have the football IQ necessary. And again, I haven't seen him play a ton, I haven't watched a ton of film on him, so I don't want to speak out and say all this stuff and then it ultimately isn't true. But from what I've heard and from what I've seen, he is not good. Duke Riley didn't practice on Thursday. There's no guarantee that he plays. There's a lot to look at with this Eagles linebacking core. If you can get Mark Andrews in one-on-one situations, now, I know that's wishful thinking. Teams are going to double and triple Mark Andrews. If you can get him on those matchups with those linebackers, even the safeties, Jalen Mills, the safety, bites on a lot of things. He has not impressed so far for this Eagles team. Really, I'd expect Darius Slay to potentially travel with Marquise Brown, their best corner against the Ravens' best receiver. I think that ultimately might be the matchup, but the advantage that Marquise Brown has against Slay is with his pure speed. Now, Slay is one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. There's no doubt about it. Practiced in a limited capacity on Thursday with a concussion. So usually what that means is they're making progress and that he will suit up on Sunday. But for Baltimore, they can take advantage of that matchup, and I think they should. But the issue is, all right, let's say Marquise Brown takes Darius Slay and he's on that island, and let's say he's rendered ineffective by Darius Slay. Let's just say that happens. Who is going to step up? Avante Maddox is looking like he's coming back for the Eagles. He's a guy who can be reliable, can have really good games, but other points, he's looked really, really lost on the field. Cravon LeBlanc, another guy. Nickell Roby-Coleman, who is a decent slot guy, he's in there as well. Will the other receivers be able to step up? I actually want to go dark horse here and say Devin Duvernay might have a big game. Because what you're seeing is Boykin and Jackson clearly don't have the chemistry. You want to get confidence in Boykin and you want to keep having Jackson look his way. But one, how much are you going to trust him in what is a Super Bowl year right now for Baltimore? It's a competitive Super Bowl year where they have the potential to go and win this championship. So how long are you going to prioritize that development over pure results? And two, will Jackson even look Boykin's way in general? We saw that play in the end zone where Mark Andrews scored. There was a guy draped all over Mark Andrews, and Jackson passed up a wide open Boykin to throw it there. Now, maybe he just didn't see him. I'd assume if he saw him, he would have thrown it there. But there needs to be some type of chemistry between those two. I think that if they can develop at least a little bit of chemistry in this game against the Eagles, it could go a long, long way in helping this Baltimore offense this season and helping Boykin in his development as well. But where the game is going to be won or lost for the Baltimore offense is in the trenches. That Ravens offensive line going up against the fearsome Philadelphia Eagles pass rush. We talked about it a bit with Louis yesterday. Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat currently lead this team with 3 sacks apiece. Derek Barnett has 2.5 of his home. Jannard Avery, the former Cleveland Brown, 1.5, along with Jalen Mills and Fletcher Cox, who have 1.5 of their own. You have Javon Hargrave, Hassan Ridgeway, Malik Jackson, Vinny Curry. So many guys who can put a hit on the quarterback and get the quarterback down. Now, the Eagles throughout this week have had Jalen Hurts resemble Lamar Jackson in practice and kind of mimic what Jackson does. Now, to be fair, nobody can mimic what Jackson does. Lamar Jackson is in a category of his own. But, you know, maybe that'll make them a bit more prepared. Maybe it won't. Louis said yesterday in our show that the Eagles really struggle with gap discipline. They struggle with setting the edge and staying disciplined on the edge. So if the Ravens can get Lamar Jackson more involved in the run game, again, only 2 carries for 3 yards for Jackson last week against the Bengals, I think that's a key part. But Jackson will have to go through his progressions because there will be pressure in the backfield. There just will. Now, hopefully Stanley can stifle the likes of Barnett and Brandon Graham, But, you know, if the tackles do their job, Stanley Orlando Brown Jr., how is that interior going to look against Hargrave? It was linked to the Ravens a tiny bit this past offseason for his ability to pressure the pocket, to get pressure from the inside. Then you have Malik Jackson, who laid that monster hit on Joe Burrow a couple weeks ago. This Eagles front four is good, so the Ravens will have to rely on their interior guys. Bradley Bozeman has had a phenomenal 2020, in my opinion, so far. Matt Skura, not so much, so how is he going to respond to having a fearsome pass rush? And whoever starts at right guard, honestly, it's a mystery. Is it Phillips who's going to retain his job that, you know, I wouldn't say he lost because he was injured, but, you know, this is an opportunistic league. If you are out for a week, somebody goes in and plays better than you, your job is lost, so maybe this is an open competition right now. Fact of the matter is, the Ravens' offensive line is going to have its hands full. They have to keep that pocket clean for Jackson so he can go through his reads. The secondary for Philadelphia, I'd say, is 50-50, has some good players, has some not-so-good players, mixed results there. So for Baltimore, this passing game has to get going in some way, shape, or form. Part of doing that is getting the run game going and kind of having those two go hand-in-hand with each other. If they can do that, not only will they be able to beat the Eagles, but it will have serious, serious impact on how good this offense is later in the year. And that impact will only be good. We're going to head into our final break here, but when we get back, we're going to be flipping the field and talking about the Ravens defense going up against that Eagles offense. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. We are back, our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday edition. Kevin Ostreicher still talking with you, and we talked about the Ravens offense going up against that Eagles defense. But now let's flip that field and talk about the Ravens defense going up against the Eagles offense. Now, the defense was the story for this Baltimore Ravens team in Week 5 against the Bengals. 3 points total. Really should have been zero, but it's neither here nor there. They also had 7 total sacks, 5 of which came from defensive backs. And I mean, this was the game. Week 5 was the game that the pass rush needed in order to get back on track. And I'm not saying that everything's great and the pass rush is elite, because truthfully, it's not. But the Ravens don't need it to be an elite pass rush. They just need it to be a good one. And what the Ravens saw on Sunday against the Bengals was that their pass rush still has potential to go out there and wreak havoc, whereas over the first few weeks of the year, we didn't see the sack numbers we were expecting with adding Calais Campbell, with adding Derek Wolf, with having Jude on for another year. There were a bunch of things that weren't falling into place, but the Ravens seemed to have put it together with a really blitz-heavy game plan against the Bengals. That's just what worked, because the Bengals' offensive line is horrendous, and Joe Burrow, the rookie, really just couldn't figure out how to stifle the Ravens, especially when he was getting pressured on almost every single play. But moving on into this Eagles game, the Eagles offensive line has issues of their own. Lane Johnson, their star right tackle, hasn't practiced on both Wednesday and Thursday, so we'll see what today's injury report has to say. But if he can't go on Sunday, that is 4 offensive linemen, 4 starting offensive linemen that the Eagles will be without. They don't have a ton of their guys on that offensive line, and they've had to replace them with mid-level to not-so-great guys on that line. And adding insult to injury, Matt Pryor, who's been starting at guard for the Eagles in the wake of another starter who's been out, is out with an illness. So maybe he will return in today's practice and that will be that, but if he is not able to go, Jamon Brown would be the guy to slot in there at right guard for the Eagles. And again, this could be another game where the Ravens go with a blitz-heavy scheme. And now, you know, what am I saying? The Ravens are always a blitz-heavy team. But what I'm saying is showing those looks like we saw against the Bengals, and that is bringing Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott up to the line while having a deep safety in the back half of the secondary. Now, the issue with that is that Marcus Gilchrist left practice early on Wednesday, and he was the guy that the Ravens used in Week 5, is that deep safety. So if he's unable to go on Sunday, he wasn't able to practice on Thursday. If he's unable to go on Sunday, I would be very interested to see if the Ravens were to call up either Nigel Warrior or Geno Stone to play that role, because it seemed like having him back there to kind of alleviate concerns of giving up a deep play and having him back there as insurance really helped the Ravens disguise coverages at the line, really helped the Ravens bring those two safeties up to the line. And now what you're potentially looking at, if Gilchrist is not able to go, who played, I believe it was 20 defensive snaps on Sunday, is taking that element away and having to put Deshaun Elliott in that back half of the secondary, which again takes away the possibility of having your two starting safeties go up to the line. So I'd like to see the Ravens maybe call up Elijah Warrior or Geno Stone to take on that role. I know that both have never played in an NFL game, but I think it'd be interesting. And going up against Carson Wentz, whose numbers right now, 6 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, as Louis kind of alluded to, had a rough couple weeks to the start of the season, but has kind of picked it up since. For Miles Sanders, a really good back, averaging 5.1 yards per carry, 3 touchdowns on the year, but this Ravens run defense is absolutely stifling, and I don't see anybody running on this Ravens defense. I mean, Joe Mixon averaged under 3 yards a carry against the Ravens. That's how good of a run defense the Ravens have right now. They have been phenomenal in that aspect, so I think the Eagles are going to have to beat the Ravens throwing the ball, and what does that mean? Well, if Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson can't play, it's going to be Travis Fulgham. It's going to be Greg Ward. It's going to be John Hightower, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. There are a ton of guys on this Eagles roster who play wide receiver, but there are a ton of guys on this Eagles roster who do not have a ton of experience playing receiver at the NFL level. So what does Baltimore do, and what can Baltimore do to kind of use that to their advantage? I mean, look, the Ravens secondary is an elite unit. The Ravens secondary has Marlon Humphrey, who is the punch-out king right now. Marcus Peters, who baits quarterbacks into terrible throws. They have Jimmy Smith, who is a do-it-all guy, the old head of the room, according to Deshaun Elliott. They have Deshaun Elliott, who has come into his own over the last few weeks and has said himself that the game has slowed down for him and that he is not as nervous as he was early in the year. And he wasn't nervous because, you know, he didn't think he knew what he was doing. It was because he didn't want to mess up and let his teammates down. You have Chuck Clark, who can come up and play that dime linebacker role, as well as be a force in the back half. The Ravens secondary is loaded, not to mention Anthony Averett, who has actually played very sound football. I know there were concerns about him after Tavon Young went down, but we have not heard Anthony Averett's name a lot. And for a cornerback, that is one of the best things you can have happen, is to lock down your guy and have them be irrelevant in the game and to have the guys you're covering not be thrown to, not be targeted. That's really good, and I think Averett has played really sound football over the last few weeks. But the Ravens, I think their big issue here is going to be covering Zach Ertz. Now, Ertz has had a down year this season. Only 20 receptions on 35 targets, 145 yards and a score. But the Ravens have historically, and this year it's been the same story, struggled to cover tight ends. We saw Travis Kelce work this unit. We saw him absolutely obliterate this Ravens defense. Jordan Akins for the Texans in week 2. We saw Austin Hooper and David Njoku and Harrison Bryant in week 1. Those are talented tight ends, and Ertz has no shortage of talent, so the Ravens are going to have to put, I think, 2 bodies on him. Put a linebacker on him, add some safety help, and make these wide receivers beat the elite secondary one-on-one. Now, who it's going to be, who the Eagles wide receivers are going to be, it's going to be interesting, but now we transition back to where we started the segment, and that is with the pass rush. How will the Ravens use their blitzes against this Eagles team? I do not think we see a lot of defensive back blitzes, or at least not the number that we saw in week 5. I think that was specifically because the Bengals offensive line literally could not pick up on the pressures, were struggling gap control. It was just a porous effort from the Cincinnati offensive line, and in turn, it got their young stud quarterback literally killed on the field. So what do I expect this week for the Eagles? Yes, their offensive line, it has its own issues. Injuries have obviously taken their toll. But I think this Eagles offensive line is worlds better than the Cincinnati offensive line. I think that tells you how bad I think the offensive line is for Cincinnati. But, you know, this Eagles offensive line with those injuries, yes, it helps the Ravens. But the Eagles have seen some decently good play out of the backups. Jack Driscoll is somebody who impressed after replacing Lane Johnson. So if he isn't able to go, Driscoll will be the guy to fill in there. The Ravens have to get their pressure in a multitude of different ways. I see the Ravens kind of easing up off of the defensive back blitzes. Not that they're not going to be there. I totally think that we're going to see Marlon Humphrey come off the edge. We're going to see Chuck Clark bust a blitz up the middle. There are going to be a lot of those, but not as much as we saw in Cincinnati. What I would expect is a lot more stunts from the edge rushers. Get Matthew Judon on the edge, work him around and have him burst up the middle. Delayed blitzes from the middle linebackers, seeing Patrick Queen bust up the middle as well. If Derek Wolfe isn't able to go, we're going to see a lot of Justin Madubuike and Broderick Washington in on these plays. See what these rookies can do. And Wolfe and Calais Campbell, there needs to be pressure from the interior. Force Carson Wentz out of the pocket and have your QB contain on, because Wentz can run. He can run it a little bit here, 23 carries for 122 yards. So Baltimore needs to keep their eye on Wentz. But overall, I think this is a win for Baltimore. You know, this game might be a little bit more competitive than I think most think it will be. But for the most part, I think Baltimore has this one in the bag. If I'll give it a final score prediction here, I'm going to go Ravens 34 and Eagles 24. So ultimately, I think Baltimore gets the win and moves to 5-1 on this young 2020 season. That's all that we have for you today. When we get back here on Monday after our two-day break, we'll be breaking down everything that happened in the Ravens at Eagles game in week 6. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you on Monday.